They get all the poses down, like you can see. Let's see this one right here.
What is that, downward dog?
That's, I forget the name of that one. Here's a downward dog there. And there's this one. It's just like a inverted. There's some of that. And so here's a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. Deham shanavasaram avishtam utitam va siddho pashanti yato jagamat sarupam daivat pechamata daivat vasat upecham vaso yata parikritam madhira madananaha. Just like a drunken man does not notice if he is wearing his coat or shirt, similarly, one who is in perfect self-realization and who has thus achieved his eternal identity does not notice whether this material temporary body is sitting or standing. Indeed, if by God's grace the body is finished, or if by God's will he attains a new body, a self-realized person does not notice. Just as the drunken man does not notice the situation of his outward dress. So when Jesus Christ was being taken to the cross to be nailed, and there was all these people there, obviously crying to see such a saintly person being mistreated, and he said, cry not for me, cry for yourself and your own children. Meaning, the saintly person, because their experience of the world is on a different level, you can't bring them down. Just like if you are materially wealthy and you have your car gets a scratch, maybe it's a BMW. If you have a bunch of Ferraris and your BMW gets a scratch, it doesn't hurt you because you're not so much identified with them. But if you have worked at UPS your whole life, or the post office. My father worked, Jackie works for the post office. My father worked there, still working there for 35 years at least. My mom worked at Airborne Express, and she saved up her money and got a BMW. And she was afraid to park it. No, but now she has a Prius. It's a little less anxiety for her. But when she first got that car, she was afraid someone's going to scratch it, just in the groceries, grocery store parking lot or such. Now, if that car got a scratch, how would she feel? It would be an actual extension of her nervous system. She'd be no, you hit me. So here it is stating that one who has a full self-realization, they may even die and it doesn't affect them. They're so much aloof from the situation of the body. This is from the 11th volume, 13th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, which we're studying right now. And it's really far out. There's the guru who's speaking is a swan. He's speaking to an angel named Brahma. And the swan is actually Krishna himself. And so Brahma naturally asks, who are you? And then he gets these super far out questions, answers that he's like, maybe I shouldn't even said that. Because he says, who are you? And then he says, well, if you're asking me that in relation to the body, here this is what he says. So if you're thinking me that I'm a soul like you and I, then there's no ultimate difference between us. You know, we're both of the same quality. Since all souls are ultimately one. So how's your question appropriate? Then he says, if you think I'm this body, then you should ask, who are the five of you? Because the body has five material components. It's got mass, it's got liquid, it has gases, it has chemical energy, and it has space. So who's the five of you? And if you think that the material elements are all ultimately one, then there's no real difference between you and me. So he's speaking kind of on the Advaita line, the oneness line. Very far out stuff. But he begins to explain many different things. But one of the first things that is explained in the Vedas is that we have a false conception of the self. We think we're this physical body. So we think we're Texan or American, we're white, we're black. And then we think we are the conceptions that we have for the particular time. We're Republican, we're Democrat, we're a tree-hugging activist, we are a Nazi, we are, you know, so many different things, different conceptions. But the self is actually eternal. It existed before this body. So just like my car is a 2004 Toyota, but I was around before that. So if I was to walk around and say, I'm a Toyota, I'm a blue Toyota, nice to meet you. Who are you? Oh, I'm a Mazda, nice to meet you. Yeah. So, one second, I wanted to read a little verse here that I saw, that was cool. The false ego. So we have ego, we have actual identity. It's not that, you know, sometimes we hear the word ego in a negative sense, but that's more the word arrogance or pride. Pride is like building up to, and arrogance is more gross. But ego just means the sense of identity, existing. And so, they're saying the false ego, the ahankar, the false sense of I, places the living entity in bondage and awards him exactly opposite of what he really desires. Therefore, an intelligent person should give up his constant anxiety to enjoy material life and remain situated in the Lord, who is beyond the functions of material consciousness. So, as Krishna in the Gita says, basically the people who are happy are the ones who are not chasing after it. So we're one who chase after happiness or more so pleasure, material pleasure. Puryamanam machala pratishtam. It's like rivers, the desires that come in to our consciousness. For example, if we could all be given an indestructible pen, you know, it's a new Kickstarter campaign, they got this cool pen that is indestructible. And we have the ocean as our ink. And we could have the sky as our canvas. We would run out of ink. We would run out of space on our canvas. Our indestructible pen would break, and still we would not be able to account for all our different material desires, because it's endless. Actually, we all take birth in all kinds of different bodies based on our desires. Now, none of us look exactly the same, and we're all just one species. There are 8,400,000 other species of life, according to the Vedas. 8 million different types of living entities. And each body is actually a facility for different desires to be fulfilled. So what to speak, just one species,
earthly human being. There are other humanoid forms. It says in the Vedas that there are 400,000 different human-like beings in the universe. Higher planets, lower planets. We have here Bhumandala, the earthly realm. And so within the human body, so much variety. You can be like Bali, you can be, play Mridanga really good, have nice ripped abs, yeah. Be fit, you know. You could be good at music, you could be good at speaking, writing, you could be a good friend, you could have all kinds of different facilities are there. Different types of bodies. And that's just a human life. Now if you want to sleep all the time, there's other bodies. You can be a bear, or nobody's going to call you lazy if you sleep for, you know, 6 months. You can be a gorilla and be really big and buff. You can be a flea and be a high jumper. You can be a dolphin and surf the waves way better than any human. There's so much facility. So all this variety is actually indicating the desires of the living entities. We have so much desires. So in the Gita, Krishna says, apuryamanam machala pratishtam. This desires enter our consciousness like rivers flowing into the ocean. But the person who is deep, like the ocean, doesn't become unsteady, doesn't become bewildered. For example, there are hundreds of thousands of rivers flowing throughout the world into the ocean. And the ocean never becomes overfilled by the influence of the rivers. You know? The only thing that can affect the ocean is the moon, the tide, that powerful effect. But the rivers flowing in doesn't make the ocean go up. Doesn't affect it. Because it's so vast, it is so deep in relation to the rivers. The rivers are quite insignificant. So one whose consciousness is deep, though there's so many material desires, they remain unaffected. So, apuryamanam achala pratishtam samudra apa pravishanti yadva tadvat pravishanti Sashantam apnotana kama kami. That person is shanti. Does anybody know? Shanti, shanti, shanti. Peaceful, yeah. So that person is peaceful. And as Krishna says in the same chapter, you cannot be happy without being peaceful if your mind is disturbed. That is the purpose of yoga, is that the mind becomes undisturbed. Yoga chitti nirodha, that's the first verse of the Yoga Sutras, meaning that the mind becomes controlled. Because the mind is our friend when it is employed in our, according to our desire. For example, your steering wheel. Is it your friend?
Could be.
When you're in control of it, when you're in direction of that steering wheel, holding on to it. Now, what if you let the steering wheel go?
Yeah.
And let it just do its own thing. Then it's your enemy. So the mind is udarat atmanatmanam atmanam mavasadayat atmanayiva atmanor bandur. Atmaiva Ripur Atmanaha. So it is Bandur or Ripur. It is friend or it is enemy, based on how we deal with it. If we have the clarity to see the distinction between the mind and the self, and thus can fulfill the desires of the self instead of just chasing after the aspirations of the mind, one can become self-controlled and be peaceful and also be happy. So anything, any questions that sound reasonable or strange or remind you of something?
Mm-hmm. No, I didn't mind either. I was wondering about how you said that that person that is Shanti, the one that is the ocean with the rivers flowing in.
Yeah.
Who would be that person? Give an example.
That person who, due to their spiritual maturity, they're unaffected by those desires. Because it is not that they're just unaffected, because they're actually experiencing something superior.
Mm.
And so they're being fulfilled in other ways other than just the physical, mental. And so it's not that they're not trying to be happy, but they're happy, but it's not through temporary gains. They're not invested in the temporary. Jesus said, do not store your treasures where thieves, moths, and rust lie. I mean, those things that are, guaranteed to be taken away. So don't invest in the temporary, because the temporary is not our actual partner. Because we're eternal beings, but due to false ego, we think we're the temporary body. And so, as eternal beings, we are seeking eternality in relationships, in living situation, stability, in economic shelter, in comforts and wealth. We're looking for those things that just don't fade away. And in fact, not only even fade away, actually improve over time. But the material nature is everything is the opposite. Everything is always changing, and the direction it always goes, it gets old. Everything gets old. Not even objects, even the subjects of the object, like Avengers do. It gets old. First time, woo! But second time, third time, 50th time, it's old. It's like a chewing gum, and practically all the flavor is gone. When your memory gets old enough, then you can go back and watch it again, because your memory also got old. But everything gets old. That's a law of diminishing returns. And it's not what we're seeking. We're not seeking that. That's not what people really want. So it is frustrating. It is really frustrating for those who are actually successful, because the rest of us may not be actually successful in getting wealth and power and fame and beauty and adoration and distinction. But those who actually worked hard and have the karma to be powerful and wealthy, they're very frustrated because it didn't work, it didn't do it for them. So we are eternal, and we're trying to marry ourselves to the temporary. It is a bad marriage. A guaranteed divorce.
Death
is going to steal everything away. So you have three outcomes. Either you desire some situation, some person, some item, and so you're lamenting not having that situation. You get that item, you get that situation, that person, and then so you have your three options. You can have lamentation, you can have greed for more once you get the item. What did who was the famous billionaire in Dallas? Who was the
Addison White Buckley?
Yes.
Howard Hughes.
Howard Hughes, yeah. So they said, now you have $1 billion. What would you like next? And he said, more. So there's next, that's another option, is greed. Lamentation, greed, and then the last thing, fear. You have the thing, you're afraid to lose it. Yeah. George Harrison. Okay, go right here. George Harrison stayed at Prabhupada Vani Ashram in 1996, which was my teacher's home. He donated it to the temple in Vrindavan. And when I stayed in India in 2001, I stayed at that place. But George Harrison stayed there for 3 months. And they asked him,
So what did you make in your royalties during your stay? And he said, 90 days, 90 million. And he says, every penny earned was another anxiety bought. It's all this more anxiety, fear. So, but we're not there. And I don't know if any of us in this room are billionaires. So we're thinking, yeah, yeah, well, maybe. But if I got it, then, you know. I would really know how to, you know, enjoy. You know, I would be afraid. I wouldn't be afraid of losing. I wouldn't, you know, I'd be just enjoying it up. So, material world is dissatisfactory. It doesn't mean that one has to leave the material world, but one has to leave material consciousness. One has to rise above just seeking for the temporary. Because it is outside of our, it's like a fish, and you take him out of the water. So the fish is enjoying the ocean. He sees some nice food, and he's the big fish, so he pushes all the other fishes out of the way. Get out of my way. Yeah. He pushes all the other fish out of the way and he bites onto the food. He got a hook. Gets hooked. And he's taken out of the water. So material life is frustrating. We work hard and we try to get something, but it's actually has some misery to it. And it's like being a fish out of water, because you can give a fish out of water anything. You can give it a Playfish magazine. So, look at the scales in that one. You could give it a cigar, you know, some herbal coffee or something, you know, whatever. You can give it all kinds of things. Fan it, say, you're the most handsome fish I've ever seen. You're beautiful. You're a cool fish. You know, massage, give it a massage. But he's not happy, because it's actually, he's not experiencing his natural situation. Eternity, you know, he's not experiencing his natural situation. An experience without pain, suffering, temporality. So, despite our best efforts, they did a recent study in Dallas. They did a scientific study, and they found out that despite the best efforts of the greatest scientists here in Dallas, Texas, the death rate is actually still 100%. It just stays there. Try hard, but sometimes they give a post-dated check, you know, just wait, give us some money, invest in us, and in the future it will happen. And you know, a lot of people have this kind of daydream. But material world is meant, it works in a certain way. Just like if you're trying to use this microphone to, make peanut butter. It's probably not the best thing. It doesn't work that way. I guess you could kind of grind the peanuts on this, but I don't know how successful you would be. It works. It's designed to do a certain thing, and it has a certain quality. So material world is a playground for souls to try to be separate from the Supreme, and also get fed up. It's not necessarily a place, if there's an intrinsic suffering in the sense that it's just unnatural, the whole environment, but we're not placed into suffering conditions that are out of our own reactions for our own deeds. So it's not like, okay, this person is punished. You know, we get karma, so whatever comes our way, we have from our own baggage from the past lives. But there is a metaphysical suffering of just not being satisfied, even if we do have good karma, good results within this world. Beauty, wealth, fame, good family, even despite all those things, there's this type of metaphysical suffering. And what the Bhagavad Gita says and all these ancient books from the East is that we are, it's because we're not these physical bodies, and therefore you gotta feed the driver, not just the car. We are the passenger within. Any other things you want to...
You just said we're the passenger within. Krishna's the driver.
You can use both analogies. Is it you're the driver or Krishna's the driver? And you're the driver because you're responsible. Yeah. You know, if you're driving, you decide, okay...
I'm the backseat passenger telling the directions.
So you are the doer in the sense that what happens is being dictated by your desires. Mm-hmm. But it's not like everything is absolutely under your control. There is... material nature facilitating everything. So in the Gita 5th chapter, or 18th chapter, talks about the five doers. So we're one of those doers. So we definitely, otherwise, there would be no reason for karma if you're not actually doing anything. Or there would be no reason to say, oh, these are good things to do, these are things that are not good to do, because you're not really doing anything anyway. But the sense of that everything is really under your control is that that's an illusion. Anything else? Anything that's stuck out to you? Or
question going back. You said the ocean is the ink and the sky is the canvas, and you said indestructible pen.
Yeah.
But what analogy can you relate that to?
Oh, is this that how many, that was our desires.
So the desires
are just like endless. Okay. So endless that the ocean would dry up.
Our desires are the pen, basically.
Or the, if we were to write out our desires, we would run out of ink if the ocean was our ink. And if the whole entire sky was our canvas, we would run out of canvas. And even if we had an indestructible print, somehow it would break. It means that material desires were never satisfied and they go on forever. It is like you have a fire and there's a fire and you say, okay, I need to put out this fire. So you take a bucket of oil and throw it on the fire. So it's like, you know, itching the scratch. It doesn't actually make it go away. So we may have a desire and we may act on that desire and it may, you know, hide itself, but it basically plants more seeds of future desires. So we're not necessarily passive negation. Negation means you're just trying to stop all the desires. We're not trying to stop the desires. Just like if your house is leaking and has a problem, you could just like stop the house from existing by blowing it up. So we're not trying to do that. But we're trying to fix those desires, come back to our natural original desire of the self, which because you exist, you actually, the expression of your existence is desire. But right now we're desiring according to what is called the false ego, a false conception of the self. Not to stop our desires, but to bring about our real desire. It's like if you colored one of those light bulbs with blue paint, the real light, only a certain spectrum of it would be shining. You wouldn't see the full
The soul is actually pure by nature, but it has been covered over by like a tint of conditioning.
So, which is refreshing to know that whatever consciousness that we may presently have, that's not our actual perfect state. Because, you know, sometimes one may desire to, you know, lose, get rid of their consciousness, just become like a oneness blob, or sometimes like in, if you're growing up in a Christian culture, you're taught, oh, you're sinful by nature. But actually the soul is pure by nature. It's not sinful by nature, it's pure by nature. But we are taking on a particular conditioning and we can actually eradicate that conditioning. And thus,
one recognizes one's faults, but one doesn't identify with those faults. Because if you recognize your faults, you can address them. But if you identify with your faults, then you think, oh, yeah, my envy of others, my pride, my you know, meanness, that's just me, so what can I do? Just gotta, you know, join some club and just be accepted. But spiritual life means we grow. We don't just stay in kindergarten. We actually see progress in our psychology over time, that actually our psychology becomes transformed. Just like you can see when someone is getting better from a cold, their fever goes down. So when we grow in our spiritual life, we should find our sense of peace and happiness is increasing because our sense of material identification, characterized by also many material desires and the desire to establish herself like with, you know, pride, arrogance, all those things, they start to reduce. Does that make sense?
What is our actual perfect state?
Perfect state is that we are in the spiritual world, lovers of the Supreme. Just like the hand, its perfect state is to work with the body. It's not meant to take the food in. You know, where you're having mashed potatoes, gravy, balsamic glaze, baked tofu, and some orange vegan bun cakes. Now, if your hands are just like rubbing all that stuff on your hands, it might feel kind of nice for the hands, but give it a week of those hands going on strike, those hands would also suffer because it's not acting in its natural position, being part of something greater. So the soul is part of something greater. We're all part of God. We're all interrelated. And when we act in that nature, we're happy and satisfied. Just like if you make sure the water gets to the root, then all the leaves, they're nourished, they are watered, the food goes to the stomach, then all the limbs become nourished. So that perfect state is a lover of God, and that is a whole variegated topic. There are souls in the spiritual world that love God as his parent, because a parent has more love to offer. There's souls in the spiritual world that love God as his, you know, BFF, and he is that person who can 100% give himself to one person and 100% give himself to another person. We can't 100% give ourselves to anyone. We still have to use the bathroom. We still have to work a job to pay the rent. We can't really. We can give a certain portion of our time and attention, but we can't give all of our attention because, you know, we still have to put food in our mouth. That's giving attention to her. But that unlimited supreme entity can fully reciprocate with all living entities at the same time. And so, one time we have, basically there's a constant competition between the soul and God who can outlove the other. And they're just like, outloving each other. And Krishna is such a gracious person, full of gratitude, that you do this and he takes it like, oh my God, that's amazing. How could I ever repay you? And that's the opposite is like a miserly mentality, is that people do things for us in this world and we easily forget it. But God actually has the best personality. People love him, not because it's like a should or you're supposed to, but Krishna has the best personality. So he's so magnanimous that whatever you do, he's like, oh my God, thank you so much. I could never repay you for that. That was amazing. You gave me an apple. With love, so amazing. And in the soul, in the same way, it feels like, oh my God, so much gratitude. So it's like this intoxicating, ever-increasing, exponential bliss that's going on there. Somebody asked our founder, Srila Prabhupada,
Well, if you don't experience pain, then how do you know what is happiness?
And he said, come here, let me kick you. And when I'm done, you'll be happy. No, no. It is also relative in that it's always increasingly more blissful because of that competition of love. You don't have to, you know, have diarrhea in the spiritual world to realize how great it is. You don't have to break your bones or have backaches or, you know, have your, you know, friend, you know, screw you over or whatever. You know, you don't have to have that. You don't have to have all the negative stuff that this world has to relish the bliss. And there is also what is called vipralamba bhav, meaning love and separation. There's sometimes that you're with Krishna, and sometimes he's gone, and your experience of that when he's gone is even more blissful, because that meditation of love in separation in the spiritual world is actually blissful. All the different emotions still evoke this kind of blissful feeling, just like dry ice. It has the feeling of fire, you know, but it's actually cold. It's actually cool. So even all the different types of relations that they have there, that have intense emotion, like you know, Krishna's gone, or something, it actually has the cooling sweetness of love. So it's all there. Does it answer your question?
Have you held your eyes to your skin?
Say it again.
Have you held dry ice to your skin?
When I was younger, I did. Yeah, it doesn't. It feels like a burn.
They say it burns. I've never done.
Oh, I wouldn't. I don't want to experiment.
It's like you know those batteries, the ones, the square ones that have the two ends on them, and.
Oh yeah.
This is messed up because I didn't know anything about it. But I think it was probably a year and a half ago.
9-volt battery.
Yeah, my friend, he told me, he goes, just put it on your tongue and then you'll know whether or not it works. And I said, what? And just do it. So I put it on my tongue, and then I had got those little burn marks on my mouth. And I was like, oh my God. Like,
really? Was that strong?
Yeah, like it burnt my tongue, like those two little circles.
Wow, that's a strong.
It obviously worked.
That wasn't like a old one. That was like a brand new one or something.
Yeah,
wow.
Like, and I didn't know.
Wow. Yeah. I'm not going to do that again. I did that when I was a kid, but I never had it that strong. Yeah. Anything else? Anything you'd like to share? Your name is, again, it's?
Candace.
Oh, I should remember that. That was my high school BFF, Candace Cho. If the bullies picked on me, she'd rock 'em, sock 'em. She was tough. When I went to Hawaii, my kids and her kids, we all played. Yeah. Cool. Anything else? All right. So I don't know if the yummy mashed potatoes and stuff is not ready, then we'll do like a little bit of singing in a few minutes if it's not ready right now, and we'll have it.
Say, what better way to pass the time?
Yeah. Well, thank you guys for your time. It's your first time to the Darshan Room, isn't it? Yeah. Oh, cool. Thank you guys. Usually, this is a really small one. It's usually a bit more people here, but it's always fun. And we try to come. Have you guys eaten at the restaurant before? Okay. So what we try to do is we try to outdo the restaurant. We competition of love. We try to put more love in the food. Maybe they also do that, so we'll see who wins tonight. We'll feed the cooks at the restaurant. They get to judge. Hare Krishna.